I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Bob Niederbeer. That'll take a couple times to pronounce correctly. It's Bob Niederbeer. He is the founder of Benefit RFP and a partner at Simplicity Group. He helps companies design and implement executive benefit plans. Bob is the author of 7 books, too many to list here quickly. But what's even more interesting about Bob is he has actually gone behind enemy lines in war zones to help companies that he's working with. This should be an interesting conversation for sure. Bob, welcome.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it.
All right. We got to start with the... We've had all sorts of folks on the Leaders and Legacies podcast. I literally had nobody who has gone behind enemy lines to help their business, has gone into a war zone to help their business. And you said something about Kiev. You went into...
Kiev is the most recent place I went to, kind of early on in the war. We flew into Chinua because the airspace was down, so we took a van ride from Chinua, Moldova, all the way up to Kiev.
How long was that van ride?
About 10, 11 hours. We didn't make it past the curfew lines, and if you've been to a country that's in a wartime and they have curfew, if you're out after curfew, they pretty much are going to be in a lot of trouble, get shot, that type of thing. And we didn't make curfew, so we actually stayed in a bombed-out hotel where we kept getting awakened during the night by a bunch of pack dogs that are coming around trying to, you know, they're looking for a snack from you. But then we got into the city the next morning, met with the oligarchs, spent about a week out there. It was interesting because every time Russia would send over bombs, they would actually, you know, broadcast it to all the citizens. And so all of a sudden, the map of Ukraine would get lit up and it's all red zone. And you go in the basement and, you know, hopefully the bombs don't get you. But it's always interesting because, you know, whenever you're in those periods dealing with the leaders of the countries that are under attack and the businesses that are getting destroyed along the war zone lines, very different conversations than business in general. And so you see a lot of emotional stuff. Of course, oligarchs are their wealthy business people out there, and they're concerned. And when those folks are concerned, you know, it's affecting everybody at that level. So it's just very interesting times.
Wow. What's some examples of, you know, so what do you think they would have talked about if they weren't in a war zone versus what did they, you know, what were they actually talking about when you were meeting with them?
Well, if you think about an oligarch, they're handling large businesses, and some of the borders between the countries that were under attack, these folks are having their factories bombed out. They're having their people that are out there being killed. During that point in time, no male figures were allowed to leave the country. And, you know, so, and they do that because they're trying to keep as many of the male citizens around for fighting as they can. And so these people are trying to, you know, save their businesses. For one, they're trying to figure out if the land where their businesses are occupied is going to be a new country that's taken over. They're trying to figure out who to talk to that's going to help transplant them. You know, when the U.S. gives billions of dollars to these countries to help out, it's going to some of these things. It's going to military ventures. It's going to business ventures. And, you know, they don't just send money. They send people out there to really audit what's going on. And I had a chance to meet with the leaders of Ukraine and met with the gentleman that his sole responsibility was keeping the men intact in the country. He was the one who actually let me out because As you can imagine, when we got to the borders going back, I'm a male, they don't know where I'm from, and I'm leaving the country. And you go out under armed guard, and they ask a million questions before you just go. So he had to make sure that my exit was all set up and ready to go. The other thing that you get into, though, is that part of the world is very high with kidnappings. And as an American successful businessman coming into the borders of a war, and your possibility of having a Russian driver is very high. All of a sudden, the van might go the wrong route, and that's what happened on the way. So we had to reroute the driver in a very different way to make sure that we got under the right direction that we're supposed to be going. So things happen, things change, plans change as you go into those situations.
How do
Very
you whoa,
exciting.
whoa, whoa. How do you reroute the driver? I mean, if he's kidnapping you, I'm guessing he's intentional in getting wherever he's going. I'm guessing a hey, please, can we take this route instead? Probably doesn't work.
Yeah, no, when you go in those situations, you follow satellite guidance and you know when you're off course. We were off course, and so we had a less than pleasant conversation, and the drivers get replaced. And so, and it's not always, really an easy conversation. I won't go into a lot of details that happens. It gets pretty ugly. But those are the things that happen. You're in a country where war's going on, and an American business person going into that country, you have a per capita income before the war of Ukraine about $5,500 a year. A $10,000 kidnapping's a pretty good bounty. It's a couple years of payment. So you just got to be careful. You got to keep your senses around you. Whenever I'm out in those countries, I tend to on the last couple of days, I tend to ditch my, the folks that are there to guard me or look over me. And the reason I do that is when you get out in certain areas without any type of security, you hear the real conversations that take place. If you're after curfew, you got to be careful, but it's actually pretty easy to walk around after curfews because it's quiet. There's the only people that are meandering around are going to be soldiers or military vehicles. And when you're under curfew, like in Kiev in those times, everything's darkened at night. There might be some lights around some small doorways, that type of thing, but you have a lot of freedom to kind of walk around the city and see the different things. And you do have to pay attention so you don't get caught and get in trouble. You go under there in almost a very suspicious point of view. You're not necessarily sure that the people you're talking to are going to represent the people you're trying to represent in a fair way. They might be on the other guy's side. And so you see a lot of that going on because there are a lot of people in that example in Kiev that are from Russian backgrounds, and they're still, in charge of certain governmental things. And so there's just a lot of things that go on. You just got to kind of keep your head about yourself and then enjoy the opportunity. And what I do is when I come back to those types of things, I write about them in books, tie it into business, tie it into adventure, and give people a good view of it.
Well, that's cool. Well, so let's talk a little bit about so what you do when you're not going into war zones is you help folks with executive retention or top talent retention.
Yeah, I've been doing that for over 3 decades now. It's been a passion of mine. My father was a senior exec with AT&T, and he used to always have events at the house when I was a kid. I play guitar, and so his friends would come over that were execs, and they'd want to play guitar. And so, I just have always been very comfortable with that. And so when I got into business after college, I wanted to get into the corporate marketplace. It's where I'm most comfortable with. I love dealing with board meetings and advising boards, and I've advised boards of companies of public and private large companies, several thousands over the years, and I still do sit on several boards. And for me, it's again, you're talking to people what they want to try and get to. You have a team around you, a great culture, and when you're thinking about executive benefits, a lot of people I think of them kind of incorrectly. They think about how to put more money in executives' pockets, and that's really not what's going on. What you're trying to do is build a retentive channel to keep those people happy, locked into the company. And if a plan is put together properly, it actually serves as a profit center for a company. It also brings down the P&L related to expenses that you pay executives, because there's a lot of tax benefits and rules that help companies out tremendously. And large companies know this. Public companies, I think the last time I checked, 93% of them use these plans. And smaller companies, a lot of times, they don't get too engaged in them at first because they're scared. It's a big thing. Is it going to cost money? Do I have to go to the board or to the owner and say, gosh, I found another perk for the executives and it's going to cost you a bunch of money? So there's a lot of unnecessary fears and trepidation that comes from just not having experience in that. And that's where I spend most of my time. I love to mentor people. There's no charge on the mentorship programs that we put people through. We have a boardroom ready program where we put people through. So they just know and learn about how these things are operating and how they operate within a company to really help with the culture you have. If I want a best baseball team in the world, I want the Yankees, I want the best players out there. And I've got to do something different to line that up and keep them happy and in their seats. And that's what you're talking about with company culture. Same thing. I just want to keep the best people.
I remember years ago, I was about 80% out the door, 70 to 80% out the door at company I was working for. My general manager, knew that. I mean, I'd had some frank conversations with him. I remember one day in particular, he personally brought me a cup of coffee. He went to Starbucks, bought coffee, and brought a cup to me directly. And I just remember thinking at the moment, I was like, that's what feeling powerless must look like. Here he is. He's the general manager. He's my boss. He believed that he, not that anybody's irreplaceable. I certainly was, but he felt like his performance was tied to his ability to retain me. And he was stuck. And the best thing he could think of that day was to bring me a cup of coffee.
It might have been just a nice gesture.
It was, but it was very that I think that's the only time. I worked for him for 4 years, and that was the only time he had ever brought me a cup of coffee. And the overall context was, it was clear he knew I was at risk, and he was just trying to figure out, in terms of what he felt like he could do to retain me versus, what retained me. And that just kind of, I ended up working. It was funny. I left, and then he ended up getting fired about 2 weeks after I
Oh,
left.
no.
And I worked with him. He left to become CEO of a few companies, and I worked with him at two or three of those companies. And, so we still had a relationship. I went out to burn any bridges and what have you. But the reason I bring that up is, it the fear, I guess there's two ways of looking at it. One is, when people poach your employees or leave, you can celebrate that you've built a team that's worthy of being poached, which kind of guides what I want to do. I always want to have people that everybody else wants to hire away. But it also creates a sense of powerlessness of, how do I hang on to this person? They are important. They are important for my success. They're important for the team. How do I hang on to them? And I think that's a tough question that any business owner wrestles with.
Well, you've got two aspects. You've got the personal relationship stuff that you get from meeting with the employees individually. And you get to know them, you find out what their perks are, what if they're adventurous people or maybe they're spiritual, they do a lot with church. Whatever it is, they have a passion away from work. And it might just be the family, whatever. And then you have the financial side. And so we try and actually work with both sides when we're working with folks. One, with the company side, if you look at the pure financials of pay, if you're a CEO and you're making $1 million a year and I send you that check, you're going to receive about 60% of it after taxes. And so I have just lost $400,000 of opportunity that if I had set up a plan where I could allow you to set those dollars aside so that you can maximize and keep those dollars pre-tax and keep them pure, not taxed until you take a distribution out. Now you're working with a big chunk of money. So it really feels like you earned $1 million. And then what happens is a lot of people will then make the false assumption though that, well, when I go to take my $400,000 out that I set aside in an account, I'm still going to get taxed. I'm going to lose all the money anyways, just like I was. So I'm just delaying the inevitable. And that's not true. There's tax laws out there that absolutely enable people to go from state to state. For example, I'm in California, we're in the worst state taxes, and I can go over to Nevada and retire and not pay any state taxes on these distributions using the source tax rule. If I have qualified plans, there's Department of Labor regs. It allows me to get those dollars out free of taxes as long as I set it up properly. And people don't realize this, and so they end up really missing tremendous opportunities with this. The other things I can get into, if I'm a high net worth individual away from a plan, I can use any type of bank funding program and not pay any taxes on the growth of those dollars or the distribution. So there's a lot of options out there. People just have to, meet with somebody that understands this so they can help them out. And when you're talking though about, financial situations and building stickiness with a company, on the financial side, if I open up that avenue for all my senior executives and the profits that I get from that plan don't only serve the senior executives, but they roll into the average paid folks in that company, and I'm helping everybody. People don't want to leave. People won't pick up those phone calls when they're getting people that are saying, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, because we roll those profits generally right back into a plan. So the company actually is paying out tremendous perks for all their employees. And it's not coming out of their pockets. It's coming out of the tax savings and the design savings on how these plans work. That's why the largest companies use them. They don't use them simply to throw money at people. They use them in a very systematic, very smart way to make sure that they bring down the costs of these benefit plans, bring down the total payroll costs for all the employees that are involved, and put those employees in a much better financial situation. And when we have people go through our process, we have a total reward system where we'll show them, here's what you're doing right now with doing nothing. Here's what's going to happen if you set up a plan and start saving some money, whether, it's a qualified plan, getting your $30,000 saved, or a non-qualified plan where you can save up to 100% of your income pre-tax. Here's what you're going to do for yourself. And then we show them how to take the taxable adjustments and the benefits that are out there to get these dollars out to themselves and their families, as free as they can. And it's a huge differential on these people. Then when we're also talking to them too, Craig, is it's very important. Everybody's different. You and I are in different states having a phone conversation, and everybody has different goals, aspirations, whatever it may be. And, so we relate those dollars to the events that those people are going to be involved in. For me, I love giving to charity. For me, I love outdoors activities. Anything scary for me is let's go. I don't care. And I've always been that way. I've always enjoyed that. I used to race motorcycles and, did all the crazy stuff and still do. And I'm 60 years old, so, it never changes. But if you take and put those dollars, if I put $1 million, $2 million in somebody's pocket that they wouldn't have had, and now they can give it to their church or their favorite beneficiaries, or maybe take care of a child that has challenges at home. Whatever the situation is, you're changing these people's lives, and then you're helping them visualize it. For me, I'm a big believer in helping people with manifestation. I don't just write down goals. I write down goals. I say them daily. I look at them daily, and I expect them. And I've always done that. And that's, for both financial, personal, spiritual, everything. That's how I've gotten through tough times in tough countries that may be at war, and tough adventures that most people would say you're insane. My wife won't go near any of the adventures I get into, but she likes to hear about them after I'm, done with them and live through it. But for me, that's what my soul's based on. So, I believe in just really tying everything together in life and living every day with your fullest, getting the financial stuff in order so that you can afford to do everything that you want to do and take care of the people you want to take care of.
So let me approach this from a kind of of a more simplistic, probably underinformed approach. I think a lot of people, when they're thinking about, let's say, and let's talk strictly about privately held businesses, they're thinking, oh, I need to put together an ESOP. It's like an ESOP or nothing. And then the ESOP scares them. I know I have a lot of questions about an ESOP. Is an ESOP the only option, or are there other ways?
No, not at all. ESOPs are good. We work with the ESOPs all the time. We go in and we interject a non-qualified plan for the main folks running the ESOP. But an ESOP's like a 401k. It's like putting your company in a qualified plan wrapper. And it's good by bringing people into the ownership. But in reality, the ownership is very small for most of the people in those relationships. And ESOPs are expensive. And in some issues instances, we'll tell companies to look at an ESOP. But there's a lot of other plans. You can do business succession using traditional executive benefit plans, or a lot of smaller private health companies will use a private placement type of insurance product to store dollars tax-free, build it up. Very little dollars going out to the insurance, but it makes those dollars tax-free. You might use some type of phantom stock. It's popular because it's not funded. So up front, it sounds good. Most employees don't like those types of things because to them it's a hollow handshake. Most of those phantom plans fall apart before they're ever exercised, and employees know that. So they have to be real plans. And there's even split dollar plans where there's a share between the company and the participants. But I've gone through four different sales, and I can tell you every single time I've sold a company, it's different than what I was expecting. It changes as you move along. You look at the buyers and the sellers, and you try to find out what the strongest marrying point parts are. You're not just trying to sell it. The days of somebody just coming in and dropping you $100 million are very far and few between. So they're really looking for a plan of here's how the transaction is going to happen. Here's what's going to happen after the transaction. And it might involve succession for some people, and it might involve longevity as far as savings for other people. So you got to look at every plan completely different. We work with a section on our website where I think we have last count something like 35 million subscribers on it, where we can get a complete evaluation of a company for succession planning, for buy sell planning. So, a lot of companies, they'll put a buy sell plan together but never fund it. Huge mistake, because if somebody becomes disabled or worse, dies, you've got a plan now and you've got stated amounts generally, but if there's no funding vehicle, now you've got a real problem. So we do a lot of corrective surgeries around proper uses of succession tools, how to do it. And a lot of times you'll do bootstrap plans. You'll have something where the next owners have been with the company for 20 years, but they don't have any money. So that's where you can bring in deferral dollars and build assets for them. And if they don't end up buying it in 10 years or whatever the deal is, then you pay them out of the plan. If they do, then you use that money generally for a down payment to a bank note. So there's just a lot of ways you can look at it, and it really depends on the size of the company and what the multiple is in that market space.
So I see a lot of businesses just kind of get stuck in inaction because it feels overwhelming. What are the risks to them if they of not making a decision on this?
You have to make a decision. We all have a built-in succession plan, right? We're all going out feet first, so we know that. If we do nothing, God help the people that are the beneficiaries, both on your business partner sides and on the family side. Most family members don't want to be in the business because they don't understand it. Maybe they don't, that's not their aspiration, but you still want your values to go to them. So you have to come up with a plan. The biggest challenge that I see all the time is people make the mistake on the business side of bringing in the wrong partners. They don't really necessarily know how to vet the people that they're dealing with. We see a lot of times, and I love people that sell insurance or investments or 401ks and all these things, but I also know they very, very seldom have the expertise around all the different business structures that we get into. And I've been doing this before the regulations existed. So I've been doing this a long time. And so that experience will drive different results. And so we get a lot of plans, unfortunately, that a broker or advisor has given the wrong advice and has put the clients in a bad situation. So the biggest thing to vet on this is to make sure whoever you're working with has skills and experience, and have them prove it on. Have you sold executive benefit programs for private companies in the pass-through market, or for a public company, whatever it is that you're calling from? If you're trying to do a succession plan, have you worked with succession plans? Have you built models? Have you done this? Can you give me some successive and successful situations that you can share that experience with? If they can't answer that, you're at the wrong place. And we'll see people that are, unfortunately, I had a 401k that was a broker. I thought they understood deferred comp. We put the company in it, and it's a horrible mess. And this is no dig on 401k guys, because at the end of the day, there are some of them that we work with that are phenomenal. But getting to the right people is something that you have to do. The wrong advice is going to mess you up.
What would be your advice to somebody that has some top performers that they don't want to lose?
Put together a plan of some sort, and don't wait. I remember years ago I went into a company. I was in Santa Barbara. Went into a company and they had they were a manufacturing firm, and the owner, the family had been around since the late 1800s. It wasn't a young company or anything. And the primary shareholder owner of the organization was sitting down there with the CFO, COO, and I think it was the CIO, if I remember right. This is years ago, but sat down and said, "We don't need any benefit plans." Now, remember, I was brought in by the CFO, who had been there for less than 6 months, and the other two people in the room with the owner were also there for less than a year, and so they've had turnover at some point. And I asked the owner, "What's turnover like?" And he said, "Nobody ever leaves." And all three guys were brand new, and I threw that out. And then they said, he said, "Nobody needs a benefit plan. Nobody needs any dollar set aside. I pay everybody well." And he did. He paid them extremely well. Problem is, they were getting killed on taxes, and it was costing them money to stay. And they had brought this up to him apparently about a half a dozen times before, and he was really gruff and grumpy. And he said, "There's no way I'm doing this. I'm not doing a plan." And at that meeting, and I've never seen anything so brazen in my life, the three employees all handed him their resignations. And so this is how strong it gets. You're not doing a benefit plan just to throw money at people. It's really not that about that at all. You're doing it in a way that locks people in and rewards them for being locked into the organization's success. Every year I'm managed by success. If I have a successful year, then yeah, there's going to be bonus dollars and all that kind of stuff. If there's not, I'm treated the same way as my employees are treated. If we have a bad year, they don't get bonuses either. And I pay my employees directly up to 100% of income when they hit the bonus on the stretch marks. And then there's little steps going up to that. And you want to put together a platform that keeps everybody happy. Also enable them to put away some dollars that they want to save for their kids' education or things that they're going to need before retirement in a nice either tax-free or pre-tax area, so that when they go to pay for those goals, they're utilizing much stronger values than after-tax money all the time. And when you do that and you make people feel good on the emotional side, on being loved from being in the company culture and all that, these people will stay around for 20, 30 years. It's very common with my clients that we see people retiring 30 years in the business, 25 years in the business. And it's a wonderful thing because they haven't left during all those years. And we've just managed their plans and gotten to know these people, their families, their spouses, if they're in the high income, their state attorneys, all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, Bob, this has been fascinating. Obviously, you help people deeply. How can folks reach you?
Probably the best way to get me is you can always go to benefitrfp.com. And we have, full website up there. You can reach us that way. A lot of people reach me through LinkedIn. I've got tens of thousands of followers on LinkedIn. You can, and it's, just pull up Bob Nienaber, Benefit RFP, and you'll pop to the right place. But reach out to us either way. And we'll hop on the phone, have a discussion, start the conversations. And our biggest goal, really, Craig, is the mentorship of that call. We just want to get you settled with what you're trying to achieve. Start the process, and then we'll take you whatever direction you need to go, because there's not a facet in that arena that we haven't worked with on a regular basis.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
I appreciate your time today, Craig. Always great seeing you.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.